Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. There is no way now to avoid some of the big questions of the United States presidential election upon us. Normally, the kickoff for this is Labor Day the preceding year, so we're in the normal time span now. But let's face it, this has been a discussion, and we've been watching developments in a media frenzy for most of the last 8 or 9 months. Now we need to face some big questions. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation today about this issue. To what extent should we take the religious commitments of political candidates into our consideration? How are we to think about these religious beliefs? Are their actual beliefs off limits in terms of public policy? That's a big question. Michael Kinsley had his take in the current issue of Time magazine. I want to come back and talk about how we as Christians should think about this issue. Mr. Kinsley argues that the statement made by some candidates that I'm a this or I'm a that, but it doesn't affect my public policy, just won't wash. I am in total agreement with him on that. I differ with him on some other things about his argument, but I'm in total agreement with him that it's irrational to say I'm a this or I'm a that, and it means everything to me, but it doesn't matter when I get elected to office. But we're going to be talking about this. Obviously, in the background of this are different candidates with different belief systems, and that's the point of the conversation. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. First, to review some issues in the news. Television itself is in the news because of the impression that things are getting worse. And we know it's not just an impression. We know when it comes to sex and violence and language on television, things are getting worse. The Associated Press runs a story today by David Bowder. It tells us, again, that what we're seeing is more explicit sexual content in terms of mainstream television programming. Last week, we were looking at the claim made by the TV networks that they really don't have to worry about the family hour anymore, suggesting that since we have DVDs and TiVo and all the rest, parents can actually just take care of that however they would want. But you need to know what that means is that explicitly sexualized and explicitly violent television programming is now on during the time children should be expected, at least some of them, to be awake. According to a recent poll that was taken, 71% of Americans believe there are too many reality shows on television. And you also have a good number of people who have just had enough with how crazy these shows are. Jeannie Peterson, age 59, of New Orleans, Louisiana, said, "I'm not entertained by watching people eat spiders." You know, that gets to the whole problem that I have with this genre, and I don't watch any of them. I've watched some of them one time just to get an idea culturally of what's going on there. But I can tell you, number one, it's not reality. We are fooling ourselves to call those reality shows. Not one of them is a real-life setup, and not one of them is handled in a way that reality would dictate, because reality doesn't come to us as we're being videotaped on television by a professional production team. There's nothing real about that. So what you have is just another way of putting sex and violence and kind of a soap opera theme into a package that supposedly is going to interest people. Television specialists say there's no way we're going back to the good old days. Those words from television historian Tim Brooks. He went on to say it's indicative of the love affair that people have with television. As with the people you're closest to, you're always complaining in a loving way, of course. I'm not sure he is exactly right about that. I'm not sure that a lot of people are complaining and loving it, because I am increasingly hearing from people who tell me they just turn it off. And that is something I would just encourage every single person to consider, and that is, you know, just turning the thing off until there is some compelling reason to turn it on. Because it is a scandal that television has become an intellectual pacifier now for adults, as well as for a tragic number of children. USA Today is out today with an article in their forum section entitled Live and Let Live. Here's what they say as the subtitle. Public opinion polls reflect what many people see in their daily lives when it comes to gay rights, issues of race, and beyond. The USA has become a more tolerant nation over the past 25 years. The writer of this forum piece is Michael Gartner. He's a retired journalist, according to USA Today. He was a journalist long associated with USA Today. That's not mentioned. It says here he's the principal owner of the Iowa Cubs, the AAA farm team of the Chicago Cubs. Well, let's look at what he has to say. Listen to his opening paragraph. My grandson has two moms. He's 6 months old. When his moms take him to water babies lessons, no one seems to think it's unusual. When they bring him to the baseball park where I work, no one seems to think it's unusual. When he was baptized last month in a mainline Protestant church in Des Moines, the minister didn't even think it was unusual. And when earlier this month he was formally adopted by my daughter, her partner is the biological mother, a sperm bank donor is the biological father, the judge didn't think it was unusual, and these days it isn't. Now, as Mr. Gardner writes his article, he goes to some polling data, the poll in particular from the Freedom Forum, First Amendment Center in Washington. He cites such things as change over 25 years. In 1982, 34% of Americans believed that homosexuality was an acceptable alternate lifestyle. Now, according to this poll, it's 48%, increase from 34 to 48. In 1986, 43% of Americans approved of unmarried adults of the opposite sex living together. Now the number is 55%. In 1983, this is in 86, 52% of Americans thought that women should be allowed to hold combat jobs in the U.S. in the armed services. Now the number is 74%. In 1992, 29% of Americans thought that gay and lesbian couples should be legally permitted to adopt children. Now the number is 46%. A couple of interesting notes, some observations here. Number one, I don't see that as a huge shift. I do recognize that there is some shift there. But in every one of those issues just mentioned, it's been incremental over 25 years. So even as we are now seeing the results of this shift, and we need to talk about it and think about it, we need to recognize that these things do not happen at lightning speed. This is really fomented and being pushed by those who have an agenda to make it happen. Now, you heard his opening paragraph. It's very personal because he's talking about his own grandson, who is being raised by his daughter and her lesbian partner. But he goes on and says, all this tolerance has had a backlash. The general public rise in tolerance has created a very high level of intolerance. That being said by Mr. Haynes, again of the First Freedom, the Freedom Forum's First Amendment Center in Washington, he went on and said that the greater tolerance of gay and lesbian people, the more intolerant religious conservatives become. Now, let's think about that for just a moment. I'm going to make a very clear suggestion that religious conservatives haven't changed our position at all, haven't become either more or less tolerant on this issue, but it's unfair to say we become more intolerant. The fact is our position hasn't changed, and the position looks more intolerant against a culture that is beginning to idolize what they call tolerance. In other words, we haven't moved. We believed that homosexuality is sinful behavior, period. But we don't believe that it's any more sinful than we did 25 years ago. That's a ridiculous argument. But as the society, and what you might say is that the norm point begins to move and has undoubtedly moved in a more liberal direction, let's just use that word, they'll call it tolerant, then Christian conservatives find themselves more and more in what sociologists call a cognitive minority. And that is certainly something to keep in mind. I do think, however, when Mr. Gardner writes that this kind of situation with two moms, he says he didn't think it was unusual, and the judge didn't think it was unusual, and the liberal Protestant church in Des Moines didn't think it was unusual. We need to realize that if you hang around in liberal Protestant churches and you hang around with an academic and journalistic elite, it's probably not going to be considered very unusual. But in mainstream America, it is still somewhat unusual. Otherwise, he wouldn't have had to write this story in the first place. Salon.com is out with a very interesting article, and it's one of those articles that makes you think, because the substance of the article is that women have become the new men. The article basically argues that, especially on television, women now have the very heroic roles, and men now have, at best, something of a supporting role. Now, it's interesting to think about this, but the actual argument behind this Salon.com article is that women now have to be presented as heroic, as strong, as muscular. They are the rescuers. They are the leaders. And men are increasingly presented as those who are, well, if not intimidated by the woman's leadership, then at least smart enough to get out of her way. It's very interesting to think about what television says about us. It would be fascinating to think about what someone outside our culture would see if he looked within this picture. You know, my honest feeling is that that is not a depiction of where America is, or even where most women or most men think America is or ought to be. But let's remember, mainstream America is not producing the television programming, is not writing the scripts, is not setting the tone, and certainly is not setting the agenda for television. But the flip side of that coin is this. Mainstream America evidently is watching. Back with your calls at 877-893-8255. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. On Tuesday of this week, I posted an article entitled God, Politics, and Politicians. Here's why. As America has confronted so many issues over the last four decades or so, we have developed a pattern that is evident among our politicians. Here's how the game is played. The politician says, I'm Catholic, I'm Jewish, I'm an evangelical. In the case of Mitt Romney, I'm a Mormon. But don't worry about that, because when I'm elected to office, I won't be a Mormon president, I won't be a Jewish president, I won't be a Catholic president, I won't be an evangelical Christian president, I'll just be a president. So I'll have a guiding principle in my life of the Book of Mormon, or the Bible, or the New Testament, or the Catechism of the Roman Catholic Church, depending on the candidate, until I get in office, and then all that will matter will be the U.S. Constitution. And Americans have seen this game played for a long time. Most famously, it began in 1960 when John Fitzgerald Kennedy, the senator from Massachusetts, was running. He was not the first Roman Catholic Party nominee. That was Al Smith going back to 1920. But he was in the modern era of 1960. He was the first Roman Catholic who had a real shot at winning the presidency like that. And one of the big questions was, can he win in non-Catholic areas? Will he get non-Catholic votes? There was a great deal of prejudice against Catholics. And this was a huge question. John F. Kennedy went to Houston. He spoke to a group of Southern Baptist pastors in Houston. And he got up and he said, look, I am Roman Catholic, but don't worry about it, because I will not be a Catholic president. I won't bring my Catholicism into the Oval Office. And so I'm not going to be there doing the Pope's bidding. I will be there to enforce the Constitution. Fast forward to 1984. The issues are now a good bit different. As a matter of fact, in 1984, the issues are a lot hotter. And in particular for evangelicals and for Roman Catholics, because the issue of abortion became an issue. It wasn't an issue in the 1960 presidential campaign. It sure was by the time you get to the 1980 race and to 1984, one of the leading Catholic politicians, most influential Catholic politicians in America in 1984, was New York Governor Mario Cuomo. Very much identifying himself as a Roman Catholic, but also pro-choice on abortion. And so the big question was, how can someone simultaneously say, I'm a Roman Catholic and I accept the Roman Catholic Church's teaching on abortion? Mario Cuomo actually said that he believed that abortion is murder. But then he turned around and in a famous address given at the University of Notre Dame, a Catholic institution, he said, but as governor of New York, my only guide is the U.S. Constitution, and I believe the Constitution does extend to a woman a right to terminate her pregnancy. Michael Kinsley, a man of the left, we need to note, a liberal commentator. Some of you probably remember him from his years on CNN's Crossfire over against Pat Buchanan. Michael Kinsley, who is also a journalist, has written a fascinating article in this week's edition of Time magazine. He says he's not buying the argument, and I'm not buying it either. Now, this is what he says. He says, Mitt Romney wants the JFK deal with voters. If you don't hold my religion against me, I won't impose my religion on you. But that deal made little sense in 1960 and makes no sense today. Kennedy said, I believe in a president whose religious views are his own private affair. But the Roman Catholic Church holds that abortion is the deliberate killing of a human being. Catholic liberal politicians since Mario Cuomo have said they personally accept the doctrine of their church, but nevertheless believe in a woman's right to choose. This is silly. There is no right to choose murder. Either these politicians are lying to their church or they are lying to us. End quote. Well, insofar, especially as you talk about this issue of abortion and liberal Catholic politicians, or you could say liberal evangelical politicians, pro-choice people who claim to believe in their heart that abortion's wrong, but that nonetheless it should be a right or a choice. I agree with Michael Kinsley. They're either lying to their church or they're lying to us, or maybe they're lying to themselves. But they can't possibly believe those two things simultaneously. Now, Michael Kinsley in his article goes on and says this: God is a personal advisor and inspiration to all of them, speaking of the candidates. They all pray relentlessly, or so they say. If that's not true, I want to know it. If it is true, I want to know more about it. I want to know what God is telling them, just as I would want to know what Karl Rove was telling them if they claimed him for an advisor. If religion is central to their lives and moral systems, then it cannot be the candidate's own private affair. To evaluate them, we need to know in some detail the doctrines of their faith and the extent to which they accept those doctrines. Worry about whether I'm going to reform health care, not whether I'm going to hell, that's in quotation marks, he says, is not sufficient. I'd love to know what you think about this. We're all going to face these issues. Every single informed voter is going to have to think carefully about these issues, because it's not only Mitt Romney, who is, as he will be quick to let you know, a member of the Church of Latter-day Saints, of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, they want to claim, the Mormon Church, as most of us know it. It's not only a problem for Mitt Romney, it is also a problem for every other politician, every other candidate. To what extent does your worldview, shaped by your religious convictions, determine what you're going to do in terms of public policy? And don't treat me like a fool by telling me it's not going to make any difference. You can't say, I believe in this strongly with all my life. I completely stake my life upon these truths, but when I'm elected, it won't matter, at least for the 4 years you've elected me to office. That's not going to wash. I want to know what you expect of your candidates. I want to know what kind of grid you use in trying to think these things through. And I want to know to what extent a candidate's religious convictions are going to shape your vote in the 2008 presidential election. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. You know, one kind of new wrinkle put in the 2008 race is the statement by Fred Thompson just in recent days that he doesn't really go to church. He certainly says, honestly, I'm not a regular churchgoer, and it's not something I'm going to talk about during the campaign. Now, that is an anomaly. That came after Michael Kinsley wrote his article, and now all of a sudden you have someone who, after all, has been really a source of a lot of excitement among conservative evangelicals, and certainly among conservative Republicans. Now he says, I'm not really much of a churchgoer, and I'm not even going to talk about it. Well, it's time for us to talk about it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Now, in my article, I go on a little further, because Michael Kinsley doesn't stop where I left off. He goes on and writes this. He says, some church doctrines give offense even though they don't constrain an outsider's behavior in any way. They can imply a more general worldview, and voters have a right to know if a presidential candidate shares that perspective. Until recently, just about all religions had a built-in patriarchal worldview, God the Father, male priests, and so on, that many today find offensive. To what extent has the candidate's church moved with the times, and what has the candidate done to push his or her church in the right direction? I say the right direction, but many voters, of course, believe that this kind of modernization is the wrong direction. They are also entitled to know where the candidate stands and to vote on that basis. Now, my response to that in my article is this. With these words, Kinsley launches into dangerous territory. He is no longer talking about how religious conviction might influence public policy. He's talking about the beliefs that govern the church's internal life. Now, I want to be the first to say that that doesn't mean that that any doctrine is unimportant to worldview. That's not true. But not every doctrine is directly related to public policy. For instance, I do not believe that women can biblically serve as pastors and senior ministers of churches. I believe that on biblical authority. But that doesn't mean that I don't believe a woman should be the Prime Minister of Great Britain, as Margaret Thatcher was. Those are not the same issues. And so we do need to make a distinction, not between whether a voter has a right to know these things. I would say the answer to that is abundantly, absolutely yes. But we do need to make a distinction between beliefs that will impact public policy and those that should not. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. It's time for Intelligent Christian Conversation about how intelligent Christians should consider these matters as we head to the voting booth. It may seem a long way off now, but let me tell you, we've got a lot of decisions to make between here and there, and we are in one of those seasons that will test the Christian conscience. The phone number 877-893-8255. Back with your calls. I'm Albert Moeller.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. I want to pretend that I was there in Houston when John F. Kennedy was speaking in 1960. I guess I could have been there. I would have been an infant. But nonetheless, had I been there, and had I not been an infant, had I been one of those Baptist pastors, I would have been offended by what President Kennedy said, then Candidate Kennedy. I don't know why those Baptist pastors thought that it was a good thing that a Catholic candidate would say, I'm a Catholic, but don't worry, it won't matter. You know, what did they understand about conviction there? How in the world can we possibly say, I'm going to stake my life upon the truth of my church? I'm going to believe it above all things. I'm going to believe that, for instance, as an evangelical Christian, I'm going to believe that the Bible is the inerrant and infallible word of God. I'm going to believe that if we have the Bible, we have God's word to us on the most important issues of life and on everything we need to know about life and morality and the basic principles by which God would have us to live and his explicit commandments and the institution of marriage. I'm going to take that. I'm going to say God revealed that. And then yet I'm going to go into office and say, no, it doesn't matter. I'm going to unplug that when I get there. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. I don't want a candidate saying, I stake my life on these deep convictions, but when I get in office, it won't matter. I want him to tell me, or her to tell me, yes, this is what I believe, and this is what it's going to mean in terms of public policy. This is how I will translate my deepest beliefs, because everyone has a worldview, and it's impossible all of a sudden to turn it into a secular worldview when you get into office, if it wasn't secular before you got there. The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. What do you expect of your candidates? Let's go to Dennis, listening on WFIA, calling from Elizabethtown, Kentucky. Go ahead, Dennis.
Yeah, Al, I agree. I want to know what the faith of a man is. That's the only thing that I'm going to base my decision on. You cannot separate that. It's part of who you are.
Okay, now I want to find out, Dennis. Let me just track that out with you. Do you mean that if you're a Christian, you would only vote for another Christian?
Because not necessarily just the Christian, but I want to know what a man believes in. The abortion thing. I think abortion is murder. I want to hear somebody say that and follow through with it. A man's faith is part of who he is, and you cannot separate it when you get into office.
Well, I certainly agree with that, Dennis. You can't separate it. I want to track that argument out just a little bit here, and let's think about this. I'm an evangelical Christian. I'm not a Roman Catholic. I certainly don't believe in the doctrine of transubstantiation, which is central to the Catholic faith and their understanding of the Mass. It's not only that I don't believe in it, it's that I believe it's an awful doctrine. That doesn't mean I wouldn't vote for a Roman Catholic to be president of the United States. Because what I'm looking for is for a candidate, if he is Roman Catholic, to tell me this is what I believe. And I'm very thankful for the Roman Catholic Church's very authoritative teaching on abortion, on the institution of marriage, on issues of human sexuality. And so I am very, very concerned to hear a Roman Catholic candidate say, here's how I'm going to apply my Catholic conviction in an honest way in the public square. I'm going to speak on behalf of the unborn. I'm going to speak on behalf of the institution of marriage, and I'll try to lead in a way that is going to genuinely build the institution of marriage and honor God's plan for human sexuality, what's good for us. I don't even expect for him to have to use all the language of his church. I expect him to talk about how that belief system can be translated into public policy. I want to know what you think. In other words, what I'm telling you is I would vote for a Roman Catholic because I'm not voting for a president of the United States on the basis of the doctrine of transubstantiation, because that's not what a president is elected to do. He's not going to be presiding in a national mass. I would vote for him if I believe that in his heart he stood for those things that are most important to me, starting with the sanctity of life and falling down on other issues. Now, if you're a Catholic, though, there is an interesting question there, because the church also teaches against contraception. Would the Catholic candidate then say, I'm going to oppose legal access to contraception? I don't hear many Catholic politicians making that argument right now. So there seems to be some kind of hierarchy of issues. Maybe that just requires us to think even harder. I want to know how you're thinking about this. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast, this is the Albert Mueller Program. Here is the question. What do you expect to hear from a political candidate? Let's just speak specifically a presidential candidate about his or her personal beliefs. And then how do you translate that? And by that we mean religious beliefs. There's not a better word for it than religious here, because when you're putting the amalgam of all these people together, that's about the only word that's left. What do you expect? And how do you then take that information and calculate, decide your own vote? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. In Kearney, Nebraska, Mike's on the line. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, hi, Albert. Thank you. Just wanted to get your thoughts on this. Watchman Nee, Andrew Murray, Jesus, and Paul the Apostle have all either come out or insinuated that we should be citizens of heaven and not of this world. We should be probably a lot less concerned about politics than we are, and more concerned about our sanctification and preaching the gospel, and we'd all be a lot better off. What do you think about that?
Well, and at one level, it's an obviously true statement. At another level, Mike, I don't think it helps us a bit. Do you vote?
Cultural level, Albert.
Pardon me?
On sanctification and preaching the gospel, if we were all doing what we're supposed to be doing, we wouldn't have to worry about this. We're all going to heaven anyway.
No, we're certainly not all going to heaven. Mike, you think all persons are going to heaven?
No, I said if we were half as concerned about our sanctification and preaching the gospel, us Christians are going to heaven that are doing what we're supposed to be doing. We can't be so concerned about political affairs.
I know, but okay, Mike, you're just going to be honest with me. And if you're going to make a statement like that, you must have an argument behind it. What then is the appropriate level of concern? Do you vote?
Lifting up Jesus, and then he will...
You will not answer my question, Mike. At least be honest. I ask you a direct question. Do you vote?
Yeah, no, if you carry that...
Yes, no,
extreme,
which one
no.
is it?
Jesus, let me ask you this. Did he not say if my people were of this world, they would fight? That's what that's talking about.
Okay, I'm going to ask you the honest question here, and I'll answer your question after you have the manhood to answer mine. Would you vote?
Do I vote? No, I do not.
Okay, well then, why did you call a program talking about how you would make a decision to vote? You're basically arguing that Christians should have nothing to do with the public square, no cultural influence, absolutely no, we should not vote. Would you be conscripted into uniform? Would you... You know, in other words, do you pay taxes? To what extent are you or are you not involved in this?
Failing them and tarring and feathering them, right? They didn't take any political action, Albert.
Okay, we couldn't hear what you said there, Mike. I'm asking you a question saying, in other words, do you pay taxes? Are you a citizen?
Yes, I pay taxes because I render under Caesar what is Caesar's. Do you understand that?
Of course I understand that.
Now, listen, at that time, Jews were getting put into the sacrifices. You remember that? Caesar put them into the sacrifices. Jesus he didn't really make an issue of it. And Nehru was impaling people and tarring and feathering them. Paul didn't lead a riot.
Well, I'm having a hard time following you here, honestly. You mean Nero, not Nehru.
Nehru, well, whatever. I'm sorry if my pronunciation isn't right. But you know what I'm talking about. Caesar was killing Christians right and left for entertainment, and they weren't leading any political movement. What's happened is as Christians have moved into the political realm, the gospel has been washed out.
Okay, the gospel has been washed out. Now, I just want to follow this for a minute. Number one, I don't believe for a moment that there's any political responsibility that's anywhere near on par with our gospel responsibility. The church is, first of all, the people of the gospel. I don't believe that politics can change a life. I don't believe that politics can save a soul. That is entirely the gospel, and that is the church's first responsibility. But even as our ultimate citizenship is in heaven, we do have a citizenship. Paul in Romans chapter 13 makes very clear we are to obey the laws. In Peter, you have a very clear lesson that we are to be good citizens where we are. And so, again, if you're honest enough to say you just don't vote and you have nothing to do with it, then I can respect that as a principled decision. I don't know why it took you so long to admit that that is your position. But, you know, when you start looking at that, you just have to say, well, you're suggesting to have nothing to do with any of this. And what I'm going to suggest is that you may think you have then separated yourself from the political sphere and from political responsibility. But you really haven't. If you have an opportunity with a vote to influence where your taxes are spent, and you say, basically, you're abdicating responsibility as to whether they're spent to kill babies or not to, and tax-funded abortions would be essentially that, then there's no way out of it. And as a matter of fact, unless you're going to go establish the Republic of You somewhere, you do have a political responsibility, even if that means you're forfeiting your political responsibility. A decision not to vote is still a political decision, and it may be a principled decision, as Mike, I'm sure with you it is, but it still is a decision. There's no way to say I'm getting out of the world. We are in the world, and we're not to be of it. And let's be very clear. Mike, your point about the gospel is so true. You know, it's to our shame that anyone would consider that. And let's face it, some evangelicals do. Some evangelicals genuinely seem to believe they're going to change the world through politics. And we need to name that for the heresy that it is. And yes, Christians certainly aren't concerned enough for our sanctification. And that's going to be true until we are glorified. And we need to hear that challenging word as well. But the reality is that we do, when we're given the franchise and we're given a vote, every single citizen is making a decision not to vote is just as political a decision as a decision to vote for candidate A or B. Like it or not, you are making either more likely or less likely the election of certain candidates and the establishment of certain policies. And I appreciate your call, Mike, and it's just another reminder to us that Christians are going to come out of different positions here. But we sure need to speak candidly about what we mean here. And just forfeiting political vote doesn't mean you're forfeiting political responsibility. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Just what do you expect of a political candidate? How do you make your decision? And are you going to accept the argument made by a politician that, look, everything I know about myself comes down to how I know myself to be a Catholic, a Mormon, a Jew, an evangelical Christian, but you let me to office and none of that's going to matter. That's the pattern we need to confront. Michael Kinsley, writing from the left, from a very secular position, says that won't wash, and I'm in total agreement with him. We need to be very honest about what we believe. We need to expect that anyone running for office will be very honest about what he or she believes, and then honestly trace that out into what that would mean for public policy. We ought to respect that kind of honesty. And frankly, we ought to expect that kind of honesty. The deal that President Kennedy made when he was a candidate in 1960 is a deal that just won't stand the test of logic. It won't stand the test of integrity. It may have been a political necessity in 1960, but I don't even think it's going to work now. I think Michael Kinsley's essay, written in this week's issue of Time magazine, is a sign that that deal's not going to work, because with issues like homosexuality and same-sex marriage and abortion out there, someone's going to ask these questions and press them. Right back. I'm Albert Moeller. Finally, let's go to Jake, listening on WTBN in Tampa, Florida. Go ahead, Jake.
Dr. Moeller, couldn't agree with you more. You know, our country is founded, or from a political standpoint, is based upon representational government, and we need honesty in our politicians, because at the end of the day, they can't represent everybody's distinct point of view. So we need honesty so that, you know, and they need to let the chips fall where they may.
Now, Jake, I like that point, especially the point on representative democracy and why that requires the honesty that I'm representing this viewpoint and not another. Can you give me we just have a very short amount of time left. What's the most important thing you want to hear from such a candidate?
I want to know they're honest to God. Pardon I am a Christian, but their opinion, their true beliefs in something, and then I'll make the determination. Don't expect someone to cover all the bases. It's impossible, especially as I said in that type of government. But we need we need honesty before we can make a valid decision.
Very good point, Jake. Thanks for your call. You know, the sum total of all this is that we still got to think through these issues. This is not the kind of conversation we can say, well, let's hold this on Thursday in September of 07 and let's just have it done. We're going to find ourselves facing questions that we hadn't faced before, some that we certainly don't know about right now. But the big question is, how do we as Christians think about what's most important to us when we go to vote? Now, just because of the conversation today, let's just remind ourselves the most important thing we do is not vote. That's not, to the glory of God, the most important thing about us. Our responsibility as believers in the Lord Jesus Christ, living to his glory, being ambassadors of the gospel and being in the church, the pillar and the ground of truth, that's what's most important about us as Christians. But we are living in this world, a fallen world, a world that is yearning and, as the Apostle Paul says, groaning for the consummation of all things when God brings all things to his glory. But in the meantime, we do have a responsibility. And just not voting or just not paying attention to this is itself a decision, a political decision that does impact how things turn out in a representative democracy. That's the amazing thing here. Everybody's opinion and decision counts, even those who don't vote. I guarantee the political pundits know that. Those who are counting the votes know it. I just wonder how many Christians know it. I think this is a great time for Christians to think seriously about this, and I'm going to come back to the fact that in the local church, this is one of those things we need to talk about. Not a political campaign, not going through the candidates, just talking about, honestly, among Christian brothers and sisters, what is our political responsibility? And what kind of decision-making process should we go through if we're going to be genuinely Christian in the voting booth as well as a church? The same way, if we have a Christian politician, we certainly want him or her to be just as Christian in office as they are in the pew. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.